At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, we're very happy to say Ronan Agar joins us. Good evening.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good. Did you get to see Mark Keane's goal against Kerry and Porky Queeve?
No, not live. I got to see it last night. It was a beaut. Brilliant. What a great way to do it. Was that the only time Cork were ahead?
Yeah, I think it was, actually. Now that you say it, yeah.
Ruthless. Beautiful. Up the rebels. I love it. Brilliant. Yeah. What a great game.
2012, the last time Cork beat Kerry in the championship.
Yeah, that's obviously number one sport in Cork, obviously hurling and football. So, that's a long time, a long, long time. But hopefully for that team now and for that group, it's a big monkey off their back and they can kick on, you know.
Few things to talk to you about. Let's start with La Rochelle because things are going very well. So sixth game out of seven, won against Claremont over the weekend, 19 points to 10. Claremont go to second. La Rochelle top of the top 14, seven games in. Is this the first time you've been top?
Yeah.
That must feel nice. Do you give yourself a satisfied cup of tea and a bar of chocolate when you get home?
You know me well from off air, don't you? Yes. What did I have? I had a good cup of tea, yeah, and a whisper. Yeah, it was great. A good day. But yeah, things are going well, and it's important you acknowledge that too, because we will hit rocky patches. That's no doubt that'll happen in this marathon season of ours. But as you say, six out of seven, it's suppose the most pleasing part from the staff's point of view is that you're seeing transfer from what you're doing during the week and you're putting it out on match night. So, we seem to have a great habit of starting games really well, but then really knocking off in second halves. But it's good that we're able to put away teams in the first half, so we have plenty to work on. But at this stage, it's why you love the game that you're involved in, and things are going well.
And what are the big things you're trying to do with La Rochelle?
Oh, I suppose we're trying to create an identity. We're trying to understand who we are and what we stand for and how we want to play the game, and I think you have to have a few game plans within the game plan if you understand me. So depending on conditions, depending on opposition, depending on I suppose the framework you give players, you're hoping they're able to pull the trigger on a few options when they go into the heat of battle. But yeah, it's been really interesting, Joe. I suppose it reminds me of Munster maybe 20 years ago with fantastic supporters, but last night it was the first time ever playing in wheat cloth, they call it over here, so there's no one in the ground. And it must be really hard being a player. There's obviously no emotional energy. In fact, that it's like a heated training session in that regard. So in terms of feeding off stuff, it's going to be a challenge for all of us about how we're going to, I suppose, create the process for the week on game night especially. But that comes down to mindset too, which is a good challenge for us as a coaching group.
And Ronan, when you talk there about game plans and then even options and other game plans within the game plan, of course you're going to fit a game plan to suit the players you have, but equally I know you're a student of the game and you're watching other coaches and how they've gone about their business. Are there certain coaches that you find yourself borrowing from more than others? Who might they be?
I obviously, as you're well aware, the Crusaders has left a big impression on me, so I wouldn't be straying too far from that, but it would be wholly, I suppose, inaccurate to try and implement what they are doing. But a lot of my ideas would come from there. But I think the great thing about spending time with a lot of good players and a lot of good coaches is that it essentially comes back down to doing the simple things well. That sounds like the greatest, probably understatement of all time, but I genuinely believe that. And it is with the ball, it's all about, I suppose, your carry intent and seeing, can you see space? And without the ball, it's basically how much pressure you can put on the opposition.
My sense of building an identity is that at Munster in your playing days, that was almost, you know, obvious to everybody. You were so many locals and a bit of sprinkling of stardust, and the identity was probably fairly obvious to you, whether you were conscious or not of it as a group of players. It strikes me from afar, top 14, teams like La Rochelle, there is more of a mercenary aspect to it, more of a, mercenary is unfair, yeah. more of a professional, you know, I don't know how many players are from La Rochelle. So in terms of creating an identity that's really going to work for the players the way Munster worked for ye, do you hand that over to them and get them to break off into little groups and come up with stuff, or do you set it out for them and try and sell it to them?
No, I think the vision would be my responsibility.
Right.
I think my job isn't to motivate players, it's to inspire players, and that was something that Razor was excellent at. And I think that's exactly why you're involved in the sport, is that you try to give these young kids and older experienced players, we're trying to create an environment in La Rochelle which would be the best in Europe for them. So on and off the pitch, but we're way off that at the minute, but there's no harm having that goal and trying to make it as enjoyable as possible for them. So, you know, you have to get the environment first, I think, right first if you want to transfer it to the pitch. And we have to get a tight group, and there's an awful lot of games in France, obviously, and it's a dog of a competition. It's extremely difficult, the top 14, because there's so much history and pride involved in the competition that you don't ever get a chance really to breathe, because I think we'll be going 18 weekends in a row of a game, so that you need to use your squad and you need to use it wisely. But at the minute, there's a great buzz about the place, and that makes, I suppose, gives you satisfaction that you are taking this club and these boys in the right direction. But it's in its infancy, but it's very important too that you dream big.
We had you on with Brian O'Driscoll sometime during lockdown. It's hard to know what month at this stage. That time was strange.
Exactly.
Strange.
But it's still all lockdown.
Yeah,
months
well,
don't matter.
It's a bit like that. It's great to have the sport back. But I remember you talking about, you know, you're dealing with a squad, and that very much includes those players who are not playing very often and aren't happy. And you weren't sure how were almost musing out loud and chatting with Brian that day on the show. How do you deal with them? Do you put the arm around them? Do you ignore them? Do you cut them? Do you try and win them over? Have you fallen on an approach that works for you?
I think, well, obviously, if you ignore them and you cut them, you're cutting yourself. So it would be a ludicrous thing to do. I think before that, you probably have to look at your recruitment too, and how you get that right and how important it is, because the club game is very different to the international game, where you have a budget and you have X amount to spend, and you need to spend it wisely. But I think it's very important that you set out your principles at the start of the season about, you can't say that you genuinely need everyone if you don't use them. So the proof is in your utilisation of the squad. So what happened brilliantly last weekend was the fact we went to Poe, and I think we made 6 changes and we won the game, but it didn't matter who was playing it. What matters is who's in the jersey. So that's kind of an ethos we're trying to create. And it is important, because it's very hard to say to a player that, I need you and depend you, without actually playing them on the pitch. They're not robots. They have emotions and need to be really cared about. And I think as long as you're honest, and as long as they understand what you're trying to achieve with the group, hopefully there will be an understanding. They may disagree and dislike it, but I think ultimately they will respect it.
We're only 7 games in. I'm sure you're as conscious of that as anybody. What are realistic expectations then, season's end, for La Rochelle?
I wouldn't even think like that, Joe. It's, as you know, I'm ambitious, and you want to try and win every competition you enter, obviously. I think the most important thing for us is that we continue to get better, and we have gotten better, but there's a lot of, I suppose, potential there to get better. But I think it would be a serious mistake to look at next May with COVID, with the with the potential or with the obvious changes in the planning and the schedule daily, weekly, I suppose the new norm now is your capability to adapt, and we say the group seems to be adapting well. So, you know, it's little mini blocks of games, but I think the most important thing is our boys enjoying it. If boys enjoy it, it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah. Have you still been largely COVID free?
We have players wise, a few of the administration staff and one or two S-bores, academy players have got it. But I suppose the protocol is rigorous. So, you know, you're very much, there's a responsibility to obviously not to mix with people. It's very hard to control that, but I think a lot of people appreciate that we have momentum, and we'd be a little bit of shooting ourselves in the foot if we were to bring the house down in terms of not adhering to those guidelines we've been given.
Very good. Well, keep it going. We haven't talked to you since Stade de France. Ireland well beaten in the end. What did you make of the game?
It was cagey for a while, I felt, and then you know, as we spoke about, I think the form of Dupont and Vakta Kaua, obviously I think Entomac brought his game to a new level that night, and I thought it was a 28-13 with 30 minutes to go that France could win by 31 points, which, you know, I mean, the French team, when they have their tails up, they can do that to teams. But credit to Ireland and credit to Robbie Henshaw, a moment of individual brilliance brought Ireland back into the game. And I subsequently obviously read a lot of articles and listened to a few discussions that it was a lot of errors caused by Ireland, I think, in terms of their execution. They were very disappointed. But I think France for me on the night were the better team and probably comfortably the better team.
And what did you make of the Ireland performance?
I thought it was mixed. I think there was some areas, I suppose, their capacity to get themselves back into the game. I think one area that potentially they may look at would be probably the ball carrying threats. It looked as a you know, I mean, watching it on the couch, that I didn't really know in the blue jersey who was about to carry. It seemed that their deception around the carrier was a little bit more varied than Ireland. I think it was obviously Ireland have a big emphasis on their ruthless about how they play, I suppose, their maps and their strategy. But France looked more dangerous in broken play, and maybe that's just down to individuals. But I think this team, the Irish team, have got to a stage where they will be very disappointed with the way they, not very disappointed, but disappointed with the way they played instead of the France because of the standards they've set for themselves. But then you also, I suppose, hear to what the players are saying and the staff are saying, it's a different team than 2018, and a lot of guys have moved on, and it's a new era, and it is a new team. But I suppose where France looked to, they just looked a little bit more dangerous with the ball, is what I'm trying to say, Joe.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you've made perfect sense there. And like, it's what Ireland are aspiring to do under Mike Catt and Andy Farrell now. More deception, to be more dangerous in broken play, you know, to get away from that predictable word that was thrown at them. Because if you take away, and I know it's a big enough if, but if you take away for a moment the Robbie Henshaw try and the Stockdale try, moments of individual brilliance, you know, and that's great, and you know, you'll always need that to win. But I'm kind of looking at the team wondering, well, you know, what's the kind of method as a team? How are they hurting the opposition, you know, routinely across the 80 minutes? And I don't know, like, Jesus, greater rugby minds than me are saying they're not seeing much of a pattern there, or not seeing much to get too excited about there.
I just think you saw the difference between Italy and France in terms of, I thought we saw definite shape and promise against Italy. There's no doubt about that. We use every blade of grass in the Aviva, and we stretched them from And you'd say, well, that's easy against Italy, but it's very, very hard to do that against France. So you probably, hopefully against Wales, you get to see the middle ground about where this team is. I think there's definite emphasis on keeping the ball alive in the tackle, playing it out of the tackle. I think there's more of a focus on the offload, and I think there's a less of a focus on nine's kicking game. But
is it hurting the opposition is the question? Like, it all sounds great,
It didn't in that game because, you know, physically France have an awful lot of big, powerful men that are in form, and they're like, an example would be Greg Aldred, who's, I think he's had three man of the matches in the Six Nations. They've Dupont, they've Entomac, and they've Vatakawa, and they've probably had, they've a bundle of riches at hooker, and they've Bernard Leroux in the second row. They have a lot of competitive players, but they have weaknesses too in their team. And it was probably, I suppose, a frustration of Andy Farrell's and the fact that he felt that Ireland released the pressure valve in France because they didn't put them through more phases and to tire them out as much as they can. But your point is valid in the fact that the opposition didn't. It looked at times, and that happens when you don't win collisions, that Ireland's attack wasn't as sharp as the French attack.
Mm. I'm almost reluctant to bring him up because I feel the fella has had more than enough scrutiny. But just give us a brief word on Jacob Stockdale.
That's the difference between club rugby and international rugby, and the fact that you have a second less with every ball, and the ball came. He made a few errors. An awful lot of players have made errors. And I suppose it's his capacity now to rebound, but it's probably not the first time he's had errors. So, what difference good players and great players, they don't make the same errors 2 weeks in a row. I don't think he's made the same errors 2 weeks in a row. He's been, I suppose, criticised for some defensive lapses. I think Jacob Scottdale is what, 21, is he? Or 22? Or is he 23 at this stage?
He's getting on 23, okay. Touching 24. Like, that was his 30th cap. You know, he feels like a rookie,
well,
but he's not a rookie.
International rugby probably 3 years. Okay.
Yeah.
But the way the game has changed now, and with the way defences are aligned, the winger is nearly the most important guy in the defensive alignment. It was probably in previous years, it was 13. Before that, it was kind of an up and out defence. Now defenders, you have playing your wingers high, so it means that they kind of sometimes have to hit fourth last attacker, third last attacker, or second last. So the decision making involved is very difficult for them. So he has made errors on the wing, but he's young. But I don't think he's made the same errors. But what happened at the weekend is that he probably, high ball is probably a new aspect to him at 15, and. Pushing the ball through along the floor on a wet night in Paris was new to him as well, and he made errors. So, it's very difficult to be able to play 15 and a level at test level. So I think for him, he needs to, if he gets the opportunity, he needs to. I think you can say, because I read his article, I thought it was a good mindset he had in the fact that. Against New Zealand, Kieran Reid knocked on his chip. And remember, I think that was probably, it would have been nearly game setting, or not, it would have been a huge turning point.
Yeah.
In the New Zealand game in the Aviva. But then, consequently, later in the game, he did the same. Well, it wasn't the same chip, but he executed the same skill and a perfect rebound, and he scores and he wins the game for Ireland.
Yeah. I'm detecting you think it's too early to give up on this guy. There's too much talent there.
Oh yeah, you can't do that. You can't give up on a guy. You can potentially, there's absolutely a few ways you can play it, but he obviously needs an arm around him. But I think in the fact that it wouldn't be, either way, you can leave him out against Wales and it's not the end of the road for him by any means. There's a way of doing this, but it needs to be, obviously, and Andy Farrell would have a great human side to him, that he probably needs to understand that making an error at a club level is very different to making error at test level, especially if you're the last line of defence and ball and is very, very precious in the test game.
Mm. So Wales come to town on Friday. This Autumn Nations Cup is starting. James Lowe is now available for selection. How big an impact can he have in a green jersey? How highly are we rating James Lowe? I mean, we see what he does at provincial level. You've talked, though, about the differences between provincial and international.
Yeah, no, but he's playing with, you know what I mean, with Leinster, who are all firing. There's no doubt about he can set the world alight with the ball. But there would be question marks about his game without the ball. And I think he's improved hugely under Stuart Lancaster when you watch Leinster. But he's kind of seems to be the guy that plays with a smile on the face and he tries. I suppose the more pressurised the situation, he seems to enjoy it and he seems to get his game to that level. There's a lot of X factor in this guy, so it'll be fascinating to watch if he gets on the pitch.
It will, and we have two teams, arguably Wales more than Ireland even at this stage, struggling for confidence. It's a 7 o'clock kickoff, so Wales last day out lost to Scotland, first time in 18 years. That is their fifth loss in a row, if you include that warm-up game against France. And now Byron Hayward, their defence coach, has left by quote-unquote mutual agreement. But you can imagine all the stories, you know, players revolt, all the, you know, Wales rugby obsessed, all the media there. Something's going on behind the scenes. You know, we don't know. But like, geez, there's kind of, if you're done with the three Six Nations teams post coaching tickets, so you've got Ireland after Joe Schmidt finding their way, France under Galtier are going one way. Wales are definitely the worst of the three at the moment.
Yeah, it's very on Wales, like, in the fact, because they were always, for the last 20 years, they were very consistent. It's probably their worst losing streak, I would presume, over a 20-year period. Yeah. And obviously, you can see the influence that Sean Edwards had on that team, and you take him out of it, and people ask what presence in sport is. Well, presence in sport is actually Sean Edwards, because I think players... you mean there's sometimes the skill of a coach is that the players play for him, and that's hugely important. There's no textbook you'll find that in. Mm. But you gotta, that's what I suppose connecting with players looks like, and Sean Edwards did that brilliantly over a long period of the time. And you can see that Wales' defence is very, very different to what has been in the past, and they set up an awful lot of their big performances on Mike Phillips' kicking game and a great kick chase line. And they're obviously leaking a lot of points, and they're low on confidence. And then, I suppose the fact that Ireland are under a new manager, and there was, I suppose, huge affection for Joe Schmidt. Now it's a little bit of question marks and a little bit of negativity creeping in. But I think one performance, as we know, can put that very much... right.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes on Friday. By the way, on Edwards, like, a lot of people might have thought that the French team would look at him and after 10 minutes decide, we don't like to send him all this work at all. He's clearly won them over, and they've been clearly eager to be won over. You've probably heard through the grapevine how that relationship has gone.
Yeah, it's gone great. He's actually come down to La Rochelle. He's...
Right.
No, because he keeps it simple, and his coaching philosophy is you know, it's worked over. He stood the test of time, and it's worked over how many number of years at this stage. But he's enjoying it, I think. But the French boys there might be a little bit of a misperception about their fitness levels and about their actual, interest or ability to play a structured game. I would be very careful not to be fooled by that. I think the French can play very unstructured, but they can play structure as well. And the players nowadays are craving detail. And I think they've made huge strides in terms of, I suppose, the S&C side of the game, but also in terms of the detail around the attack and the defence coach, because by all accounts, Galtier is a brilliant technician. And, with Edwards, I know Laurent Labitte from Racing, and I know William Servat, so they're in a good place.
Last point, and it was one really Alan Quinlan drew to my mind more than anyone over the weekend. He was on AM this morning. So Australia beat New Zealand 24 points to 22 over the weekend. By all accounts, brilliant game. There were two red cards in the game. Off Tunga Fassi, he made a high tackle on Liam Wright. Kind of shoulder goes to head, basically.
I saw the game. Yeah. I saw the game. I watched the game.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just for people who listen, maybe who didn't see it. So Tunga Fassi's tackle on Liam Wright, shoulder goes to kind of, I suppose you'd have to say head area of Wright. The referee came over, said Liam Wright hadn't
100%.
Right, okay. Well, can I play you Quinny and then you come in? You come in. So referee gave a red card. Lachlan Swinton hit Sam Whitelock. Similar kind of tackle, shoulder going to face area. Give us your opinion by all means after this. But Alan Quinlan was watching the coverage over there and just did not like the tone of the coverage and where it's taken the game.
I judge these tackles by the force that the tackling player puts into the tackle. And I've always said this, you've got to reduce the level of force to not put yourself in a position to potentially get a red card or a yellow card and hurt your team. Both those tackles on Saturday were very, very forceful. Thankfully, neither player in the receiving end got injured. But I'll take you back to 2018, the first test between New Zealand and France. And off Tuinga Fassi, the tight head prop, Sam Kane and himself tackle the French winger Remy Grosso coming off the side of a ruck. Sam Kane tackle him high first, and then Tuinga Fassi comes in from the side with incredible force, hits the guy into the side of the face, fractured his jaw and fractured his skull with the tackle. There was a penalty given against Sam Kane for a high tackle. That was it at the time. Both players were cited. Tuinga Fassi and both of them just got a caution. Tuinga Fassi just got a caution after the game. So here's a guy who's the French winger who's lying in hospital because of this force. And Tuinga Fassi does something similar again because it's off the side of a ruck and he comes in with this force. And if you're going to put that force into a tackle, you're at risk of, and people are always looking for mitigating factors and the player dropping down low. Well, if you don't put the force in it, tackle him with your chest, you know, and the professional players don't seem to learn. And what they forget at times, when John Kerwin, when Christian Cullen, when Phil Kearns, Tim Horn are talking about this stuff, it's not just in their own countries that people are looking at this. It's kids all over the world. This is on Sky Sports on Saturday morning. People can go onto YouTube and see it. And I just think it's a disgrace. And I'm really sick of these type of tackles and then people making excuses saying it's going to ruin the game. What's going to ruin the game is somebody gets seriously injured.
Yeah, so Kerwin, Christian Cullen, Tim Horn, Phil Kearns, they were all saying on the coverage, not a red card.
Yeah, I think it was, watching it live, I think Justin Marshall said that's just a penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's, it's 100% a red card. There wasn't even a moment's hesitation. Players in the professional game, in any club game, in test rugby, these would be frequently clipped and shown about what looks like a clean tackle, what looks like a yellow card, and what is a red card. And there was absolutely no moment in this clip where it can even feature in the yellow card. It's forced to the head, red card. A second clip is different scenario, but it's exactly the same. You know, I think the two players, for me, they knew immediately. It won't be long before we get to the stage where players won't even look at the ref. They'll just walk off the pitch because they understand. If you get the timing wrong, and it's very hard for a 130 kg front row forward to come up. Yes, he gets the timing, but that we in the professional game understand, and it's obviously featuring all the way down to the amateur game and people who play for fun. It's just, it's I suppose why there's so much focus on the chop tackle. You got to try and tackle people low. There are reasons why you need to target the ball, but anything coming near the upper chest to chin to face, every single player is aware that could cost his team dearly, and obviously the point that Alan makes very well.
Yeah. So what's the logic of these former players who know the game inside out saying not even yellow?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
I was, because it was probably, 10 a.m. on Saturday morning, I was ready to go for get my days going with going into the club, and I heard it, and I just said, I don't know what game, Justin, because he's a really sharp analyst and he's a good guy, but maybe he saw it once. But if you're seeing it how we see it in our sitting room watching the TV, there's force to the face, red card. It's everyone's aware of that. And that's the good thing now about what World Rugby have done. They've made this, they've implemented. Yes, certain referees or certain laws can be fall in the inconsistency rule, but this is very much black and white for me. Force to the head, red card.
Okay. We'll let you go. Well done again. Another good weekend with La Rochelle. Thanks a million.
Come on, Joe. Look after yourself. See ya. Cheers.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.